I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
All right. Welcome to Just a Bit Outside, the baseball movie podcast brought to you by Bucko Banter. Today we are reviewing Field of Dreams, a movie which details how a man would rather risk his family's livelihood for a chance to chase ghosts and play catch with his dead dad rather than go to therapy. So strap in and get your popcorn ready.
Rockin' 101, she compliment my taste. Whiskey in my lemonade, cause I like the way it tastes. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates. Order steak by the plates, and in case after case, run my race at my pace, clear the grass of the snakes.
All right, Adam, thank you so much, man. I am your co-host, Chris Miller. Today, like Adam said, we are talking about Field of Dreams, released April 21st, 1989 from Phil Alden Robinson. It was actually his second film. His first film was a disastrous commercial release. So Kevin Costner luckily put up a bunch of his own money to make this movie. Kevin Costner, producer, also star Amy Madigan, James Earl Jones, Ray Liotta, and it is Burt Lancaster's last movie. Burt Lancaster, one of the all-time greats, From Here to Eternity, is an unbelievable movie. He was the cool guy in every Western that your grandpa had. Like, watch Burt Lancaster movies because they're awesome.
If you just look at this cast and you don't know anything else about the movie, which is what I did, because I will say, somewhat embarrassingly, I just watched this movie for the first time yesterday.
How did you just now watch this movie? How did you escape Field of Dreams?
I just heard the quote and I'm like, all right, you know, I get it. I did not get it at all. I did not get it. And if you just look at the cast, you're like, this movie is going to be an absolute heater. And it took me on a ride that I was not prepared for.
Well, buddy, I'm going to tell you right now, this is based on the novel Shoeless Joe by W.P. Kinsella. And if you think this movie is unhinged, brother, I am going to lore drop parts of the book as we go on. And you're going to see Perfect. Just what the source material is kind of like. If you have not read the book, I do recommend it. The book's a lot of fun. It's very enjoyable. It is unintentionally hilarious.
I don't know if I could bring myself to read it after the movie, but maybe I'll give it a shot.
Just wait. Just wait until I hit you with some knowledge. And then you'll be like, yeah, maybe Kevin Costner was the right guy for the job. Also, he was not the first pick. This was originally pitched to Tom Hanks, who turned it down. Tom Hanks said, no bueno, no way, Jose. And then Kevin Costner stepped up, and then he just started making a bunch of baseball movies forever before he turned into a cowboy.
I don't think I could see Tom Hanks in this, so I like Kevin Costner.
And and I know we're going to talk about Tom Hanks in another baseball role, and I don't – pardon my pun here, but I think he really knocks it out of the park.
I think he had a little bit more to work with. Joke. I'm sorry about that. I think he had a little bit more to work with in that one.
Burt Lancaster also turned this movie down, but his friend read the book. He was like, brother, you got to be in it. You got to do it. And then Lancaster died like 2 years later. So it wasn't the movie that killed him, even though I think that you're going to draw that parallel at some point. I think he died because he was like 96.
He looks pretty old in the movie. All right. So we're going to get into a little bit of a synopsis here, and then we'll do a bit of a scene breakdown after that. So, Chris, you want to start with the synopsis?
So this tells the story of Ray Kinsella, that is Kevin Costner's character, kind of dealing with essentially a midlife crisis. He's got a wife and child. He ends up moving to Iowa and buying a farm, the farm that he seemingly knows nothing about. And it's his struggle with his relationship with his father, who was a baseball player. It was the only thing they had in common. And it does appear that it's the strongest bond that the family has, especially between Kara, the daughter, and Ray, the father. Buys a farm. As he's out, you know, enjoying the summer sun, he hears a disembodied voice that will periodically show up during the course of the film. They do not explain who the voice is. They will never explain who the voice is. And we're going to talk about the voice a little more near the end of the film, because there's one thing that I absolutely dislike about this movie, in a movie that I otherwise love. But the voice is, if you build it, he will come. So what does he do? The sensible thing. He cuts down all the corn and he builds a giant baseball field in the middle of, you know, the cash producing crop.
Now we're going to this midlife crisis, by the way, it happens when he's 36 years old.
Correct.
And he purchases an entire farm.
A whole farm.
At 36. Which...
Well, you know, things were different. We'll talk about exchange rates. There's another very jarring moment that I had forgotten about. Because I watched this movie like four times this week, and you've just seen it one time, and it just ruined you.
It ruined me.
It changes you forever. It's like if... Oh, I don't know, man. This might be one hell of a stretch, but this is essentially like the baseball It's a Wonderful Life. It's like It's a Wonderful Life is a weird, weird movie, and everybody
like
watches it all the time and says that it's good.
Yeah, like
there's a weird fantasy element to this. I don't want to say whimsy, but yeah, we get
There's disembodied voices. There's multiple, which we'll get into it. There's multiple instances of time travel, both by real life human being and ghosts.
Ghosts. There's a lot of ghosts in this movie. If anybody wants to know if there's a ghost in this movie, yes, there's a lot.
It's kind of a Halloween movie.
So this is very, very timely on our part, which we had planned in advance, naturally. So Ray builds a baseball field. And then one day, as he and his wife are, you know, arguing over finances, Karen walks in and says, "There's a man on your lawn," which is a great line for the little girl. And it is the titular, at least from the novel, Shoeless Joe Jackson. So the ghost of Shoeless Joe is kind of wandering around. We get to see him swing it. Good to see Shoeless Jackson swing it. And like Ray does have a scene earlier where he talks about Shoeless Joe, his accomplishments, his involvement in the 1919 Black Sox scandal. And Ray doesn't believe that he had anything to do with it. And if you look statistically, Ray makes a pretty good point. He has the only home run of the series. He had 375. He doesn't commit any errors. But Joe asks, "Hey, is it cool if my friends show up? Can I bring the boys?" So as this progresses, we get more and more baseball players, but there's only eight of them because only eight members of the Black Sox were suspended. So it's suspended players. And then things kind of go a little off the deep end here.
Yeah, this is
where we kind of get away from ghost baseball and into media censorship in the late 80s.
Just that was an absolute turning point in the movie, because until then, you know, I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, he's living out his kind of all the stories he heard from his childhood. This was his dad's favorite baseball player. That's the mending, right? The mending of the broken relationship with his dad is like, he finally gets it, right? He finally wrong. Gets this thing completely
you
wrong.
You are an idiot. You are dead wrong.
The disembodied voice.
You sound crazy right now.
The disembodied voice, the entire ghost baseball team, just like the movie isn't even close to being off the rails at this point. It's not even close.
And on the subject of Ghost Voice is back, baby. Ghost Voice comes back. Ghost Voice says, "Ease his pain." And he's like, "Well, it's dad, right?" Wrong, because it's a civil rights satirist author from the 60s. It just so happens that they're trying to ban Terrence Mann's book at the PTA meeting. I did a little digging here, because at that PTA meeting, what would you say? It's like 900 people in the high school gym.
It's the most highly attended PTA meeting that there's ever been in the history of the United States education system.
And in Dyersville, Iowa, where the movie is set, as of 2024, it has a population of 4,559 people. So like everybody was there hanging out.
The whole town.
Whole town came out for it. A fist fight almost ensues. And he's like, oh, right. It's not my dad's pain. It's very clearly Terrence Mann's pain, the reclusive author from the 60s, who's kind of, you know, like taking a backseat from fame, trying to, you know, slide out of the public eye. I'm going to go to his house and I don't have any money. We're going to lose the farm. My awful brother-in-law is trying to get me to sell the farm. And we'll talk more about Mark, the brother-in-law, who, in my opinion, has one of the single greatest villain introductions of all time.
Yeah, the antagonist in this movie is the brother-in-law, which...
And the brother-in-law is like, hey, you're going to be homeless because you cut down all the corn and you're going to lose the farm. And everybody's like, well, that guy sucks. And they're right. But the reason why we know we don't like Mark, and I know it's a little out of order here, but I don't want to wait on this. Mark can't see the ghost baseball players. And he doesn't like baseball. And that's how you know, don't trust this guy.
Yeah. Bad guy. I'm certified.
He's not a good person.
Certified.
He's not a good
person.
Not good behavior. But yeah, the reason why we know that Mark is the bad guy in this film is because he doesn't like baseball. And I think that that's a pretty good way to kind of live your life.
I would agree with that. Real quick, the link here for why he goes to Boston to go get Terrence Mann is because Terrence Mann gave one interview where he was like, it's a shame what happened to the Brooklyn Dodgers. Like, that's it.
That's it. It is the only, and like, oh, I would have liked to have played at Ebbets Field. But yeah, it was like the Brooklyn Dodgers. And then Ray Kinsella is like, that's it. That's my
his
guy.
Pain. That's his pain.
That's a very obviously what Ghost Voice was talking about in the court. So he packs up the Volkswagen bus, drives across the country, leaves his wife and child with no money. This is ostensibly very little food or shelter, since the bank's just trying to like forcibly rip the house out from under them because the banks are very scary in this movie. And he finds Terrence Mann, who is not interested in helping him whatsoever. He gives the line like I don't have a cause anymore. Like, I want people to start thinking for themselves. Doesn't want anything to do with him. He wants to run his little software startup. So, naturally, Kevin Costner just kind of throws in the towel. He's like, well, he doesn't want to come, and I can't really convince him, so he leaves, right? Wrong! If you thought that, you're an idiot. You sound crazy because he kidnaps him. He has a fake gun. He uses the finger gun in his jacket, and he kidnaps him. Well, at least he attempts to. And then that falls short because Terrence Mann tries to hit him with a crowbar. Great scene.
He walks in, almost gets his arms broken in the door.
He has a big door. The door is hilarious.
He has the finger in the pocket like a gun.
The stick him up.
He says, this is a gun. Terrence Mann says, no, it's not. That's not your finger. Grabs a crowbar. He's about to hit him. Kevin Costner just goes, you're a pacifist. That's the thing that got him to stop.
It does get him to stop, but it's like kind of a bit because he like I guess like ah he got me, God darn it!
And at no point in time anywhere during this whole scene does he ever say why he's there. He never tells him why.
No, and it's because he had a dream that they were eating hot dogs at a Sox game in Fenway, but he doesn't lead with that. He tells him that later after he almost gets clobbered with a crowbar. And the one thing that really doesn't make any damn sense to me whatsoever, literally every other part of Terrence Mann's character is like, well, I guess I'm going to go to the game with you then, and I'll just be mad the whole time. You really like don't have to go. You don't have to go to the game. Like, it was a fake gun. It was a finger gun.
Yep.
So you could have just stayed home, or you could have called the cops, and they would have arrested this man who drove 1,500 miles to abduct you.
And they're driving in this movie.
Yes. Driving. They're driving. There's a decent amount of driving in this movie.
There's
it turns into like a buddy comedy for like
we're about to have a real hike on our hands here.
So we go to the game, and there's a very jarring moment that I had just now realized. I still do this whenever they go to the concession stand, and Ray says, "Well, what do you want?" And he goes, "Well, I want children to do this, and I want people to leave me alone." He's like, "No, what do you want?" And the joke is that they're at the concession stand, so he needs the order. And James Earl Jones turns and goes, "Dog and a beer."
Dog and a beer.
Every single time I go to a concession stand, I say dog and a beer. Since I watched this movie, since I was old enough to get beer at a baseball game, dog and a beer.
Dog and a beer.
But Kevin Costner said, "Okay, make it two." Do you remember what the total price is?
I don't.
$10. Brother, could you imagine two brewskis, two glizzies?
Couldn't even imagine one brewski for $10.
Yeah, I was going to. If you get a beer for $10, they pour some out. Or it's just like hot.
You know,
it's old also, beer. It's like this was behind the couch.
I'm hot dogs have a big role in this movie.
Hot dogs have a very big role in this movie because hot dogs are baseball food. We know that these things with baseball food.
The reason that he goes to Boston is Ray's talking to his wife. And at the same time, he says, "I was at Fenway," and they both at the same time say, eating a hot dog at the same time in unison.
They had and then the that's same like the, dream.
Oh my, now we have to go to Boston.
They had it's the same a hot dream. Dog sets everything in motion. That's how I live my life.
And
it's one dog at a time, baby.
And the best scene of the movie might involve a hot dog, and we'll get there.
We're going to get there. I tried to use it as a thumbnail, and then we got vetoed on that one. It's two of each for $10. Like, oh, God. Like, baseball in the 90s, man. Well, I guess that's late 80s.
88?
Yeah. I don't remember what the Sox record was that season. Because they end up leaving in, like, the fourth inning.
That part after really
each get up and leave. So and like, bad. If you're a baseball fan, you don't leave. I have never left a game early. Never. I bought tickets to the 2015 wild card game. It cost me an unbelievable amount of money because my whole family decided the day before they wanted to go. So, you know, I'm $1,500 into this game. And then they just left. And then I was the one who, like, didn't get a ride. I had to call people. It was pre-Uber, man. Crime. Like, I'm not leaving a baseball game early. Crime. I'm not doing it.
I just don't understand why. So the reason that they leave.
There's a lot of things to not understand.
There's another premonition that happens. And pardon me for taking over here. There's another premonition that happens when they're at the game, right? He's looking at the scoreboard. He sees on the scoreboard. He hears another disembodied voice. And he looks up at the scoreboard. And it says, Archibald Moonlight Graham.
Real guy. Real guy.
And he understands what it means.
Well, he doesn't understand what it means, but he knows that there's something significant about it. Because at no point in this movie does Ray Kinsella know what's happening.
Fair. He understands that.
He's like, well, got to do something now. Because like before, he'd only heard the voice in the corn. So he's like, well, I hear it at the ballpark, so it's probably not like a gas leak or anything.
Yeah. No, he's not in Plum. He doesn't understand what it means, but he thinks that it means that Terrence Mann is not the guy that he's looking for, right? So he says, Archibald Moonlight Graham, what am I doing here? So he's like, well,
I gotta get the chisel.
You're not the guy. I'm leaving. And they just leave in the middle
of the game. Leave the game.
He drove from Iowa to Boston, convinced an activist via finger gun to go to the baseball game with him, bought this guy a hot dog and a beer, and then just decides to leave in the middle of the game. Now, that scene is very, I would say that's anticlimactic, but as soon as that happens, he leaves.
They just bounce.
He gets in his van, and you think, we're headed back to Iowa.
We're going to Chisholm.
But then, in fact, what happens is Terrence Mann jumps in front of the van.
In front of a moving car.
In front of the van. Deer in the headlights. And says, I don't remember exactly what he says, but he says Archibald Moonlight Graham
is in Moonlight
Chisholm,
Graham.
Minnesota. And where
you
do they go?
You saw it too. You saw it too.
They drive to Chisholm, Minnesota from Boston, and they leave at like 8 p.m.
Yeah, I mean, it's dark, so it might even be later than that, because it's not. This movie very clearly takes place in the summer, as it's a baseball film.
Yeah.
But yeah, they just dip. And they're like, let's go. Terrence Mann doesn't, he's not even like, hey, can we swing by my place that's like right around the corner? Because we know he's next to Fenway. He's like, how about I get like some pants? No. Nope.
That's when it turns into the buddy comedy, which I will say.
Yes, now it's a buddy comedy slash detective film, and it's good.
And then
also busts out some Doobie Brothers for no reason, just starts playing China Grove. And also that song rules.
That scene is great. And then they arrive in Chisholm, Minnesota.
So they get to Chisholm. They're like, oh, we're going to find this guy. He's a baseball player. He's famous. Can't find him. What are you going to do?
They're looking through every document that exists in the town.
Can't find him. Can't find him. Then they hear about this mythical doctor who, any good thing a doctor could possibly do in like a small Midwestern town, Moonlight Graham has been doing. So you'll hear like people didn't have money, wouldn't charge them and all this, but it turns out he passed away. So like, well, now what do we do? It's like I don't have farm money, I don't have gas money. I spent it all on two hot dogs, two beers at Fenway. Also, like tickets to that game free, or did he like? Do you think he made Terrence Mann pay for it?
No, I think he paid for him.
I mean, you kind of have to pay for him at that point.
I think you have to pay for him. Now, I want to do this next part, because to me, this is the best part of the movie, because it just makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It makes no sense.
Okay, I might have a counterpoint to this. Okay, we'll deal with that later.
So they go to the, you know, they interview all the townsfolk. They understand he's dead. They're trying to get hints. They can't find anything. And eventually they're just like, we're going to chalk this, right? They go back to the motel where they're staying. And turns out that Terrence Mann's dad, which Terrence Mann looks pretty old in the movie, so his dad has to be getting way up there, reports him as missing because he didn't answer his phone calls. So Terrence Mann says, all right, I'm going to call my dad. And Ray, Kevin Costner, says, all right, I'm just going to go for a little walk. So he steps outside. Looks up at the marquee on the theater, and it says Godfather. He's like, wait a minute. Which is that even historically accurate?
Godfather came out in what, 72, 71?
Is that actually when it came out?
I think it did.
I'm gonna do a little.
We did all of our
1972. That is correct. Yeah. So then he's like, wait a minute. And then he steps up to the license plate of the car and he rubs off the dust.
We should ask Scott when The Godfather came out.
He's going to have something to say about this.
I know it, though.
You did. He steps up to the license plate of the car. He rubs off the dust. The license plate says the inspection was from 1972. So now what's happened is he left the motel. He has time traveled back in time 16 years.
Correct.
So he sees, who does he see walking down the street? Moonlight, Archibald Moonlight Graham. And he says, are you
advanced in his years?
Advanced in, I mean, he is old at this point. Yes, he is
played by the incomparable Burt Lancaster.
To be totally honest with you, the only part of the movie that I thought was like actually acted with the proper gravitas and either not over.
Oh, really? You're surprised that the dude that was in Run Silent, Run Deep?
The only part of the movie that wasn't over or underacted, I think, is the scene that's about to happen. So he goes to Archibald. He says, are you Moonlight Graham? He says, no one's called me that in years. They go into his office. They have a philosophical conversation about what hopes and dreams are, right? And he asks
kind
him,
of what the movie's about. It's a pretty important part.
It's a microcosm of the movie as a whole. So they have this discussion. He asks him about, you know, his time in the bigs, and he explains that he was subbed in as a defensive outfielder for half of an inning, and he was sent back down the next year, never got to bat. and he would have liked to have a chance to bat. And after that, you know, they have their big philosophical discussion. They have their moment. And he says, come with me. And Archibald Graham says, nope, got to get back to my wife before she gets thinking I'm out here having a girlfriend. So he just leaves. And at that point, you're like, okay, I guess this is it. I guess this is it. So then they go back.
You're an idiot. You're a dumb guy. You sound crazy right now.
If you think that, listen to yourself. If you think that Ray Kinsella time traveling back in time 16 years,
brother, was the end
of the time traveling, you're out of your mind. So they said, well, we're leaving. I'll take you back to Boston, Terrence Mann. Terrence Mann says, you thought, buddy, I'm coming back to Iowa.
So they drive in Iowa now.
They drive to Iowa from Minnesota. And on the way, they see a hitchhiker. And they're driving a Volkswagen van. It's got the peace symbol on the window. Ray Kinsella is a hippie, which is established as the first scene in the whole movie.
He does at one point say that he like majored in smoking grass.
He says, I have the quote right here. I have okay. the, it's, well, it's well, the first.
Yeah. But he the says, movie leads with smoking grass. And it, he at says, one point, man says he goes, dope, calls it dope.
I marched. I smoked some grass. I tried to like sitar music. Amazing. That's like the third line in the whole movie. Incredible.
They do make a lot of jokes about the 60s in this movie. Oh, like yeah. how deeply unserious it is.
They do. And they pick him up. And you're like, who is this random hitchhiker? And
doesn't matter. Get him in there.
This part kills me. He goes. They pick him up. He's like, hey, where are you going? He's like, Iowa. He's like, well, I'm going at least that far. Can I get in? And they're like, sure. He goes, I'm Archie. I play baseball. That's how he introduces himself. I'm Archie. I play
baseball. That's how I introduce myself to people. I don't know about you. I'm Chris. I do a podcast with Deebs.
I'm Chris. I'm a pirate.
And I get into any car I want, brother.
So you're like, okay. Now the ghost time traveled.
Correct.
The ghost.
Or did it?
In real life, the ghost, in real life, Archie.
Could this be an amazing coincidence? Could there be two Archies out here trying to make it to the bigs via Iowa for some reason?
And you're about to find out that it's not a coincidence at all.
It is not a coincidence. It's actually the guy.
It is actually the guy. And the next scene in the movie is where we start to reach our pinnacle here.
We're really getting somewhere. So we get back to the farm. Everybody's having a nice time watching. There's more baseball players. While we're gone, they've actually organized a league. And I do like the one line whenever you first meet Mark, he's like, oh, you're watching a game? I didn't think the game was on until later. And he's like, well, it's not really a game. It's kind of practice because there's only eight of them. And that's how you realize Mark can't see the ghost baseball players.
Yeah,
but I like that it's not really a game. And he's right. He's like, yeah, it's fine, I guess, that like, you know, some legendary baseball ghosts are just hanging out on my farm and I'm talking to them and they're having like a rapport with my 6-year-old kid.
Who Great. She's heavily invested.
Oh, she's Karen all in.
Heavily invested.
Karen's ride or die. And I respect, like, Karen is like the most sympathetic character in this one. I love Karen. Karen's Absolutely. All in.
And she's like, about to be.
And knows ball.
She's about to be extremely sympathetic.
She's about to be among the most sympathetic. Because as everybody's having a nice time, and we get Archie back, and Archie's taking a hack with the boys. Again, we're eating hot dogs because we're watching baseball in the summer. And Mark assaults a child that they never really talk about. But as he's arguing with Kevin Costner, he pushes Karen off of the grandstand. The bleachers that he built, and Karen falls. What you assume is to her death.
listen, they're like grabbing her, pulling her back and forth, right? And it's like five bleachers, like it's maybe like 6 feet off the ground.
Listen, brother, it don't take much.
And she falls, and it shows her, and.
It's rough. They roll Karen over blue lips.
She's
lifeless, like nothing behind the eye. It is jarring. Because it's like, oh my God. Mark just killed his niece
in like over
fake baseball
in the most like innocuous way.
Just pushes a kid, just assaults a child.
Just crazy.
Just crazy. Completely crazy. All right, Deez, you wanna fill us in with what happens next? Because you've been doing pretty good on the Moonlight Graham tip.
I'll preface it with this, and we can maybe the whole point is he wants to get an at bat, right? So at this point, I believe he's had his at bat already.
He's had his at bat.
So
right.
So he gets
and he said he wanted to wink at the pitcher, and then like take him deep with his fastball. So he winks and he immediately throws at his head.
Yeah. So the whole point of the Moonlight Graham thing is that he wants to get in at bat because he was only a defensive sub when he was in the bigs for three outs. Okay.
He gets the real Moonlight Graham that did happen to him. But I think the last game of the regular season, whatever. It was that season, but it was just like in the middle. But Moonlight Graham's a real dude, and that did happen.
This next part did not happen for him, unfortunately. He did not.
We don't know that. That's true. You sound like a real Mark right now.
That's true. I didn't see him. So he's at the plate. First one, he winks at the pitcher. First one, heater, high and tight. Second one, heater, high and tight. He gets up. He has a little strategy sesh with Shoeless Joe, and he gets up there. And I'm watching this movie. I'm like, he knows where it is. It's low and away. Shoeless Joe just told him.
Shoeless Joe is kind of cheating.
He's ready to just.
It's not great.
He's ready to light. He's ready to light this pitch up. This is the big climax for Moonlight Graham. This is what he. This is he time traveled twice for this. This is the moment that he never got to have as a baseball player. And he hits a sack fly.
Yep.
This guy sucks, dude.
He's a glue guy, though. He's a this glue guy. Sucks. He keeps the line moving.
I mean, unreal. You build this whole thing up. They go RBIs from Boston count. To Minnesota to Iowa.
Hit a home run. They're going to suck. How many home runs does Tony Gwynn have? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
He had more than Moonlight Graham.
Keep the line moving.
But you know what Tony Gwynn didn't have? He never saved a child from choking to death. And that's what happened.
Time traveling a third time.
So you've seen this in the movie a couple times. The players, they can't leave the field. The field is of dreams, right? Literally and figuratively, okay? He dreamed it. He built it. You also can't leave the field. The ghost players can't leave the field. They'll disappear. Okay.
Everybody kind of pauses at the foul line. And, you know, you get your moment and everybody's kind of looking at Archibald Graham and he's making his move for it. And they're like, I don't know.
We have our airplane moment. Like, is there a doctor out here? And everybody looks at Archie.
Yeah. Like everybody kind of knows. He was like, he's traveling through time, but he also still practices medicine.
Because the players would never be able to know that he is going to become a doctor.
Maybe that's of the dreams. We don't know what they were doing in the corn.
So you don't know what's going to happen. You would assume Shoeless Joe can't leave. He would disappear. We don't know what happens. Late teens, early 20s, Archie Graham steps up to the foul line. He steps across it. And then he turns back into 1972, Archie Moonlight Graham. The doctor.
The shootout of the OK Corral man himself, Burt Lancaster.
Walks up to Karen on the ground, who's looking very dead right now.
Even more dead. Like, they more do dead. The lips more blue.
He goes, her lips are blue. She's choking to death. Very cavalierly. He sits her up, slaps her on her back twice. Out comes a piece of a hot dog. And he just grabs and he goes, she was choking out a hot dog. And then he just throws it on the ground. Then everyone's like,
what do you want him to do? Give it back to her? She doesn't need it anymore.
He does it so cavalierly. And then everyone's like, wow, gee willikers.
That's how you know he's got that Midwest can do. That's how they practice medicine for everything. It's like, if you need your appendix out, they're like, that's what was wrong. And he throw it right on the floor.
I'll tell you what, buddy. In 2025, he would have had the farm for that. That's what would have happened. He would have sent the invoice. And he would have... That field would have been done real quick.
He would ask Karen while she was down there, what kind of insurance you have? So he saves the life of Karen. And Kevin Costner, who almost just lost his kid, in the gravity of the moment, decides to not care about his young child, and instead to carry about 1972 Burt Lancaster, Archibald Moonlight Graham, go, you can't go back. And he realized, like, oh my God, like he sacrificed his dream of, you know, getting ahead, being a ball player, to save the life of a child, which is crazy because Kevin Costner sacrificed having a farm for baseball. So kind of like the inverse there.
I'll say this. I think he might be the only good guy in the movie.
Archie? Yeah. Archibald Moonlight? Yeah. It's not Mark, because he doesn't like it, because Mark doesn't know ball.
It's not Mark.
It's not Mark. And he did hit a kid so hard that she died. Yep. Briefly. She got briefly. Better. She got better because of Archibald Moonlight Graham. And then we get Terrence Mann dropping probably the greatest baseball quote out of like any random stuff that Vin Scully ever said, but hits us with the greatest baseball monologue of all time, delivered the only way that like Darth Vader possibly could. Like, it's that there's so much gravitas in there because it's just booming, and it romanticizes baseball in a way, and I'm sure you have it all written down. You can probably do it from memory, but it uses baseball as a way to tie the American experience together. And this is like the American societal experience. It's like an army of steamrollers. America comes on to wipe the slate clean, but the one constant ray is baseball. And talks about, you know, people will come, right? People will come. And they keep talking about, like, you know, people will come to watch baseball. I don't know how. There's not like a lot of marketing. I don't know how good this ghost is, the disembodied voice. I'm not sure. The ghost can't leave, so they can't, like, tell anybody. Graham only time-traveled as a ghost to talk to Kevin Costner, who owned the farm. So, like, that's, as a marketing tool, like, that seems wasted. Because you got ghosts. Like, I feel like you have options.
They also live in the corn.
They do live in the corn. I like that when some of them go back into the corn, they use it as a bit.
They do a little, whoa, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, what a world, I'm melting, I'm melting. They're doing, like, some Wizard of Oz stuff. Like, it's a good bit. I think that's Chick Gandle, who's very funny. First thing he does is ask for a cigarette. Like, ah, cool. It's cool. I'm not in corn heaven anymore. Could really use a heater.
Not heaven. Iowa. Iowa.
So, you know, after delivering this monologue, in a rather jarring moment, Our author and activist decides to just go into the corn and probably die. Because we really don't know what happens in the corn. Does the corn kill you? I don't know. Is the corn heaven? Hard to tell. The movie doesn't really deal with spirituality and faith, other than the fact that ghosts are real. So, yeah, he got kidnapped, picked up a stranger, didn't pay for the hot dog, I assume, watched a kid die, and then just kills himself.
He says, see you later. He said, what a hell of a story if I come out on the other side.
Hell of a He's story. Got a point. But also, like, what if you don't?
Yep.
What if you're just stuck in the corn forever? Because it seems bad. Because not all the ghosts are talking about how much it sucked in there because they couldn't play baseball.
And Kevin Costner, at this point, Ray, old buddy Ray, is pissed about this. He's like, right. I want to go in the corn.
Yeah, he's like, and hang on.
Like, it's like, the corn's not for you, buddy.
Yeah, listen, bud. Thanks for the corn. But why don't you take a seat? Why don't you park it on the bleachers there? Why don't you hang out in the cheap seats?
Also,
don't fall off the back and die on a hot dog.
This part's great. Terrence Mann gives his whole soliloquy about the meaning of life
and it's through incredible. Baseball.
And afterwards, he starts it by talking about how he did give an interview about Ebbets Field. And that how he hated what happened to the Brooklyn Dodgers, which he lied to Ray Kinsella about earlier on. And Ray is pissed. He's like, you lied about the interview. You lied about this. This is after this whole soliloquy. He's mad about
this.
Seems
to me like he might not be going to corn heaven.
And Terrence Mann says, you lied. You said your finger was a gun. Which is just like, oh. It's
an incredible throwback.
It's incredible.
It's a phenomenal throwback.
And then we shortly reach our thrilling conclusion here to the movie.
Right. and the lights are down, and there's one ball player left after everybody goes into corn, and we assume Terrence Mann goes into corn hell for smoking weed in the 60s. His drugs are bad. And there's one guy comes over, he's like, hey, he turns, and there's this like aha moment from Ray Kinsella, and he was like, holy shit, that's him. Like, that's my dad. Like, that's the reason I essentially made us destitute and kidnapped a guy. And it's this, like, the score starts to build. And do you want to say the line that goes really hard?
It's just, I laughed so hard because this is the climax of the movie, right? The whole point is he's trying to mend his broken relationship with his father. Right. His dad's catching John Kinsella. He takes the mask off. He's a ravishing, studly young man.
A real beefcake. A real hunk. Which is no surprise, as Kevin Costner was a real dreamboat himself.
He certainly was. And the quote that Ray says is, oh my God, I only saw him years later when he was worn down by life.
But yeah, like, is that like, come on, man. Like, that's how I just, every time I look at myself in the mirror, I'm like, yeah, that's what, so working just, a dead-end job.
He just couldn't even fathom seeing his father not just beaten down by the relentless masquerade that is life. And at the pinnacle of the movie, when he finally sees it, the first thing he thinks is, man, the whole time I knew him, he was looking rough.
My man was chopped.
He was looking rough at that point.
Rough, and what if he told him that? What if he was like, hey, I'm John Kinsella. He's like, I knew you and you look rough.
But you know what? The ending, I hated it. Because two reasons. One, it's cliche. Because what does he do?
I feel like it's a cliche because of this film.
He plays catch with his dad.
Right.
That's so...
It's all he ever wanted. It's a different time. It's before he has, you know, before their relationship soured. But it's not just that he has a catch with his dad. It's how he phrases it. Very concerning way of phrasing it. He says, hey, dad, would you like to have a catch?
He doesn't deserve it.
Do you say have a catch or do you say play catch? Because growing up, that was play catch.
It's play catch. It's you know, right. What? I'll say this.
Have a catch?
The dialogue in this movie.
Is that
it's not a
regional thing? Or is
it's
that
not
like
as sharp
whenever,
as it could have been?
Is that like when Neil Armstrong says, like accidentally did the moon thing wrong? Like one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Does he say it wrong? Like, do you want to have a catch?
He said it wrong to me.
I don't care for it. I don't care for have a catch. It was weird. But like that moment is important. He says it like choking back tears. You know, Annie takes Karen in the house to give them the moment. And he finds like any resentment that he still had for his dad, even though he was like, oh, dude, he was ugly as hell right before he died. He was like, oh, now I got a hot dad again. And
it's true. I mean, he's hot.
We're just gonna toss the ball around.
And the other reason why I don't like it is he doesn't even introduce himself. He goes, I'm John Kinsella. And he goes, hey, Karen, that's John. But
I think John knew. I don't know, man. I think he knew. But so they have the catch and the music builds and it's finally like, you know, all is right in the world through the crucible of baseball. And then you see, as the camera pans out to this very wide shot, cars pouring in to the farm.
Every
it's
car
like 10 o'clock.
Every
it's
single
like 10
car
o'clock. And also like everybody else went home, including Terrence Mann, who they were just trying to burn his books or ban his books or whatever. At the world's largest PTA meeting. It was like when everybody was trying to ban dancing in Footloose, it was like all those same people just went to Iowa, to Dyersville. But it's all those cars are showing. I would say, oh my God, if you build it, they will come. And they do. But also like the game's over. So all these people, there's just a huge traffic jam at 10. And when they get there, they're just going to be mad.
Yep. And there's literally one road. So like, it's,
you're just going to watch some dude playing baseball with his hot ghost hat.
That's it. Having a catch.
Complicated. Just having a catch. What are those two doing? I'll tell you what they're doing. They're having a catch.
They're not
playing catch, because that's not what we say here in Iowa.
And that's the movie.
Like I said, I don't feel like it's dated. I don't know. I just feel like it kind of transcends like a lot of time. And you said, oh, it's cliche. Yeah, a lot of cliches are because this movie was just insanely popular. It was nominated for 3 Academy Awards,
which we will get there. We have a few more segments here, but before then, we got to bring you who made this all possible today. Today's episode, the inaugural episode, couldn't do it without it.
Into our first ad read.
First ad read. Today's episode brought to you by Korn.
Korn. It's in everything.
It's in everything. It's the largest cash crop in the United States. It's in your candy. It's in your stuff that is as sweet as candy, but it's not supposed to be in there. Check your ketchup. It's in your alcohol and your gasoline as well. Without Korn, Field of Dreams and Just a Bit Outside would not be possible. Go get your Korn today.
Korn. It's in everything.
Every single thing. All right, Chris. Let's talk about this. I watched this movie. And we'll get into our ratings at the end. I didn't think that this was a particularly good movie. I understand you can like bad movies. There's good movies. There's good bad movies. This is a good bad movie. There's bad.
You're gonna
movies.
Go good bad movie. You're not going bad good movie.
Mm-mm. This is a good. Ooh, bad
I thought
movie.
You might have gone bad good.
Mm-mm. This is a good bad movie. Now, I the first thing I do whenever I'm done watching a movie, I look at the Wikipedia, I look at the IMDb. This bad boy was nominated for 3 Academy Awards. Best Picture, which is absolutely mind-boggling to me. Best Original Score, also crazy because I didn't think the score was that great. And Best Adapted Screenplay, which is maybe true. I didn't read the book. I'm sure it seems fairly faithful.
But Ray Kinsella's brother is in the book. Living on the farm. And you know why? Because he's a circus clown and he brings everybody from the circus to live on the farm. Amazing. And they all watch baseball.
I
am not making that up. It sounds like I am, but brother, his brother's a clown.
I needed that. They're like, this is a step.
Can't do clown brother. Tom Hanks already said no to the titular character. He's not going to be the leading man. There's no way he's going to be clown brother.
Too much.
Also, another part about the book, there was one person who did not love it, and that person is J.D. Salinger. J.D. Salinger actually is the Terrence Mann character in the book, who is kidnapped at gunpoint. There is a gun, and I believe it's unloaded, but there is a gun, not a finger gun. And Salinger said whenever it was adapted to the big screen, and this was in the early 80s, because this kind of got in production hell. He said, if you put me in this film, if you use my name, I will sue every single person involved in the production of this film individually. Everyone. He will sue everyone because he hated the book that much. It's also so funnier. They did not. So now it's Terrence Mann. And there's something funny about him kidnapping Terrence Mann because James Earl Jones is like a huge guy. So it's him just kidnapping a giant man.
A huge man with a crowbar. The giant man.
An armed man. Like, yeah. A very large, angry man who's armed.
So let's wrap up our quotes and our trivia here. Let's get the bits and bobs.
Now, you did say that it had 3 Academy Award nominations. It did win one award, one very important one. It won Outstanding Foreign Language Film. Do you want to take a guess? What country?
Bulgaria.
It won the 1989 Japan Academy Film Prize for Outstanding Foreign Language Film. So Shohei Ohtani got to see this as a very young man, dubbed. I assume. I feel like Shohei would be probably a subtitle guy. because that's how you're supposed to do it.
You got
to
go subs. It's subs over dubs all day.
Subs over dubs all day.
It's not even close for me.
Yes, there is a non-zero chance a young, fresh-faced Shohei Ohtani got to watch this.
I'm just going to say
Japan Academy Film Prize winning film.
I'm just going to say that's why he became Shohei Ohtani. And I'm not.
That's even, it.
I'm
he gonna, saw it. And he was like, I could buy a farm one day.
I'm going to spread misinformation on purpose. And that's how that's going to go. let's wrap up our bits and bobs here, our loose ends, and then we can get into our rankings here. So just a couple more quotes that I had written down. That's one of my favorite parts of movies. Again, one of the first lines he says in the movie, I marched, I smoked some grass, I tried to like sitar music. He's in the field. His wife is concerned. He's hearing disembodied voices. He says, it's okay, honey. I'm just talking to the cornfield. Just an absolute classic.
At and I love, and she, the point about Annie and that whenever he says that, she's like, cool. All right. Sure. Why not?
Just makes no sense at all. Yeah. Did you catch this part? Because it was really interesting to me. Shoeless Joe is given a little bit of a discussion about how much he loved baseball and how he could never cheat because he loved the competition and he loved the cheers of the fans. And he says, the thrill of the grass. What does that mean?
Just being on the field.
The hallowed thrill ground. Of the grass?
I get it. I know what he means. The thrill of the grass. It's like whenever you get to take the field. And he did it at one point without any shoes on. So nobody is more grass attuned than Shoeless Joe.
Maybe Carmen Majinski.
Maybe Carmy.
That's it. Classic. And they say this twice, and it really pisses me off that they said it twice, because if they said it once, it would have been a heater, and they say it twice and it ruined it. Is this heaven? No. It's Iowa. Amazing. But they said
and
it
then
twice
they do it again, it. And it kind of cheapens it. But yeah,
cheapens it's seven.
No, it's Iowa. Yeah, the second time it's like, okay, now it's a runner. And like, because you really nailed it with the first one. Like, yep. Not everything has to.
Could have been the best joke in the movie. Now, I actually have two good quotes that I really like here. One is from Terrence Mann. He was saying, I mean, he's miserable.
Got a couple good ones.
But this one I just thought was short, sweet, to the point. I loved it. He was talking about how he was miserable when he was an activist. Everyone looked to him for the answers. He said, I have no time left for misery. I gave it the office.
Ooh. Yeah.
Absolute heater.
Tremendous.
I gave it the office.
Only the way James Earl Jones could deliver that line. It's every word is like he's hitting an anvil.
Just unbelievable. And then
I gave it the office.
Like, I get jeez. Unbelievable. Hater, and then bro. Archibald Moonlight Graham, when he's talking to Ray, Ray says something along the lines of, but if you only ever got to be a ball player for 5 minutes, that would have been a tragedy. And he says, if I had only gotten to be a doctor for 5 minutes, that would have been a tragedy.
Tough.
Unbelievable. Top unbelievable. Line. Unreal. And then actually another time that you know Mark is a bad guy is when Karen's talking about how to save the farm to sell tickets to the ghost baseball game. He just goes, what the hell is she talking about? Bad. And then he kills
her. He's a bad guy.
And then he kills her.
And then he kills her by accident, but we assume. We don't know. She does get better. And then Mark can see the baseball ghosts.
At the end, he just goes, don't sell
this farm, Ray. Don't sell the farm.
What a
sorry about your line. Kid. Glad she's breathing again, because it was touch and go there for a minute. Good thing you got a ghost doctor. Didn't see one coming.
Just having my notes. Mark is such a loser.
Mark's a dork. He's a dork. He hates ball. He's a dork.
There's also
I don't think you ever see him eat a hot dog.
No, never.
You see everybody else eat a hot loser. Dog. Except Karen that one time.
There's also a random winter scene to show that time has passed, but it's literally 5 seconds, and he just looks out the window in a horribly, awfully ugly Christmas sweater, and it's snowing, and then just like that, it's
and
like
then it's not, just back to summer.
It's just back to normal.
And it's not even spring. Like, it's summer, because you could tell when they're coming out of the corn, you can say there's a million bugs, which is why summer is not good. Yeah. If it wasn't for baseball being played in the summer, it would be the worst season.
I agree. I think that encapsulates the movie fairly well. I think it's time to get on with our ranking. So we've decided to do two sets of rankings. We have a ranking for how realistic the baseball in the movie is, and a ranking for how good we think the movie is. For me, the baseball in the movie was fairly realistic. It seems like they got some of the mechanics of the old-timey baseball down fairly well.
And they had a number of like baseball coaches of note, you know, come in and work with the actors just so they look like real baseball players, even though there's very little real baseball in the film.
Yeah, I'm going to give this one 8 out of 10 disembodied voices. Ooh. On baseball realism.
In baseball realism, and it's... And I'm not just going to use the mechanics of the baseball. I'm going to use, like, it feels like baseball. You know, it's, you just know that it's summer. And it's just, it feels like it's just right that baseball's happening. I'm going to give it 7.5 out of 10 corns.
7.5 out of 10 corns. I like that. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to get to our movie scores. Now, this is just me from a movie critic perspective. Now, again, remember, I said this is a good, bad movie. So it's going to get a good score. But I think it's going to ruffle a couple feathers here. I'm not going to lie.
You're just going to just take a steaming dump all over the movie that I've watched.
It's a positive score. I run on the, if it's
above. Well, not my entire life. I'm older than the movie.
If it's above 50%, it's a good score.
Okay.
But the dialogue wasn't as crispy as I thought it could have been. The premise has just so many anachronisms and plot holes. It's kind of unbelievable.
It doesn't have a clown in it, but the book does.
No clowns. So
you got to deduct for clowns. Clown men.
I got to go 6.5 out of 10 dead dads.
Hard and fair.
That's it.
Hard and fair. That's it. Wow. I even knew that was coming in that hit regard. I'm going to give it 8.5 finger guns on the scale.
I think that's a great way to cap it off.
Yeah, I think it went really well.
You heard it here, folks. 8.5 finger guns. Field of Dreams.
What was the other rank? You want to say that one again?
6.5 out of 10 dead dads. Okay. This was the inaugural, the first of many Just a Bit Outside. I think you got a little taste for what you're in for here. I think we give some pretty good, hard-hitting, insightful movie analysis. Couple little goofs and gaffes here and there, shoehorned in.
Yeah, listen, we're not professionals, and we're also not getting paid. So if we're not nailing this, like, I don't know, you can just write an email.
The corn thing was a joke. We don't have corn money.
It's in everything.
So until next time, folks, we're going to watch another movie. We're going to have another episode coming out next week. We will announce at some point this week what the next movie is. Watch it. Join along. Subscribe, click the button, ring the bell, hire a skywriter, give us some comments, disembody voice me as I'm walking down the street. Like and subscribe to the pod. Don't kidnap us at finger gunpoint. Thanks for listening along. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates, order steak by the plates and it-